Great. Thanks for joining us. So we were backstage and couldn't see how many of you raised your hands, but how many of you guys know something about quantum computing or understand it? A few. So we're going to start, Alana, with a very basic question for everybody, but you have to give a very brief answer, which
sure.
is, what is quantum computing and how is it different than the kind of computing that you all might be familiar with?
Sure. So quantum computing isn't simply like a new or faster or better or kind of quantum classical processor. It really does leverage completely new effects, and that is the effects of quantum principles. And by doing that, what we can do is create computation that's no longer limited to a simple binary 0 or 1 state as you have with a classical bit, but instead, we can open up a plethora of applications by being able to leverage a principle called superposition, which means that you can be either 1 or 0 or pretty much anywhere in between. And that really is a paradigm shift in terms of technology capability, and there's a plethora of applications that will truly be revolutionary for compute, for materials discovery, like pretty much every single market vertical out there. So that in a nutshell is kind of what you need to know.
Wow, that was a really good 30-second explanation. Oxford Quantum Circuits, can you tell us what you guys are specifically doing when it comes to quantum computing?
Yes, so we are originally a spin-out from the University of Oxford, and we are a pure-play quantum compute as a service company. Now, what that means is we build the full quantum computer, so full stack, right the way from the quantum processor, which was the proprietary IP from the university. We also then do our control software, control hardware, and then we connect it to the cloud so that users and customers can run algorithms directly onto our systems. That's pretty much what we do. So Lucy, all of our systems are named after pioneering female physicists. Now, she is available on Amazon Web Services anytime between 10 and 1. That is one way you can access. You can also access through private access as well. So we can do direct interactions and help people with onboarding their quantum readiness journey in that way.
Great. So you have a working quantum computer up and running.
Oh, we have quite a few, yeah.
Okay. I mean, people talk about how many qubits or what the quantum volume is. What are some of those stats for you guys? What have you built?
Yeah, so there's a public answer and there's a non-public answer, unfortunately. So it's a great point around how many qubits do you have? Often people judge systems on the number of qubits, but I'm here to tell you it's not about simply the number of qubits. We need to have many qubits. You know, for near-term applications, we need to be able to have a few hundred qubits. Then it starts to move into the NISQ era, 1,000 qubits, tens of thousands, and then, of course, through to fault-tolerant universal quantum computation, which will be millions of qubits. So we all know we need more qubits, but there's no point simply building more qubits if the quality of the actual qubits themselves get worse, because then the overall power of the system significantly depreciates. And that's typically what we've been seeing so far, is people building bigger systems, but ultimately the overall capabilities of the larger systems getting worse. So if you look to some of the world's leading systems today, you know, IBM, they have a 72-qubit processor and they'll be launching a new one soon, I think Eagle, but actually their highest performance computer is a 21-qubit system. So what OQC can do, based on the proprietary technology of the CoaxMon, which you can tell was named by a physicist, but it's basically a unique way of building a superconducting qubit, thinking about the scalability challenges in mind. And therefore, what we can do is demonstrate 1, 2, 4, 8 qubit systems. And each time we scale, we make sure that we have higher quality overall in that process scaling journey.
Great. And I know you have some customers who are running various kinds of pilots. What are people able to do with your system today? What are people using a quantum computer for right now?
Yeah, so key market verticals, like typically finance, are all over this already. They're looking at different optimizations. They're thinking ahead for risk portfolio analysis type work. So we see a lot of small-scale optimizations through finance. We also see quite a number of small molecular simulations, which are through like pharmaceuticals or materials discovery. Quantum random number generation, that's a big application. That's one that you really can do on an 8-qubit processor, which Lucy is today, without necessarily, like, everything else you can do on a supercomputer as well, whereas there is kind of a special uniqueness about doing a quantum random number generation algorithm. And then, yeah, most people are just kind of learning their POC stages. And as we connect up more qubits in different ways, continue to reduce the errors, increase the qualities, you'll have more and more power and capability. So we do see that moving from POCs through to business added value based on our roadmap projections, where you're hitting 1,000 qubits and the right type of error rates and qualities, as well as mapping on the right error correction ratios. 2026, 2027, that's the point where we start to see that model really changing.
Interesting. I want to congratulate you guys on your recent Series A raise of $38 million, I guess.
Thank you.
And I understand that there's more sort of funding perhaps in the pipeline.
yep, that's true.
And there's a lot of investor interest sort of globally in quantum computing right now. But as you pointed out, some of these pilot projects at the moment are fairly small scale.
Yep.
They aren't huge impact things necessarily. Why is there so much interest now? What's coming down the pike? What do these investors see that has them so excited about this technology, given that right now all somebody can do is basically run a kind of pilot?
Yeah, of course. It's really one of those things where it's so revolutionary. They do recognize, from an investor perspective, they recognize this is high risk, high reward, but the winners will be like global, like many billions. So it is incredibly lucrative. So that's why investors are already looking at this today. And there's quite a high barrier to entry, of course, being quantum. So people want to get in early so that they can see it through on that path. From a customer perspective, it's really about making sure you get first mover advantage. You're thinking strategically about the future of your businesses and where the risks might be, whether that's competitor risk, whether that's cyber risk. And we need to train the quantum workforce. So we're seeing more and more banks and pharmaceutical companies and information data processing businesses set up their own quantum teams of quantum algorithm experts. So they're learning to identify within the business where quantum can have the most impact, but they're also learning the skills internally of how to then interact with the computer today so that the minute that the power becomes available, they can leverage it and you can get that first mover advantage. No one wants to be left behind.
Interesting. As some of you may know, there's various ways of building a quantum computer. You guys at OQC are doing it with superconducting qubits. You may have heard there's things out there called trapped ions, there's photonics. Why bet on this particular technology? Why do you think the superconducting qubit is the way to go?
Yeah, it's generally across the world regarded as the leading approach in terms of building quantum computers. So ultimately, there's many different ways in which you can build a quantum bit. You need a very low energy environment, which is where the quantum effects happen. And superconducting circuits are an artificial atom. So you can create this engineerable natural atom, but through an LC resonator with a Josephson junction type component for the techie people out there. But it's really cool. So it's really highly engineerable, very, very scalable. And with all of these things, we need to be working out, you know, coherence times, like how long can my qubit stay in the coherent quantum state so I can run an algorithm with multiple gates and know that it's looking at the same state. So we need to increase coherence times. But in order to run that algorithm, you do need to be able to have a number of fast gates. So it's more about the ratio. And superconducting circuits sit in this real sweet spot of having good coherence times, but really fast processing power as well. So typically working the microwave type regime. And for that, that's really that sweet spot, plus the engineerability, plus compatibility with silicon. It's a no-brainer.
Got it. Now, I think it's interesting, you have this quantum computer that's available through the cloud. Some other people also have quantum computers that are available through the cloud. IBM has one, Google has their own. Why is it important to have these located in different parts of the world? You guys are in the UK. There's a big effort by the European Union to create their own quantum computer so that there's one in Europe. Why is that important if, you know, I can access IBM sitting in New York through the cloud?
Yeah, there's multiple answers to that ultimately. And our mission at OQC is to get quantum in the hands of humanity as quickly as possible so that we can start to play around, start to do these POCs, leverage and benefit the whole ecosystem. And for us, that is a global strategy. But as you rightly pointed out, regionality is important. And a lot of this comes down to the standard types of problems whenever we're dealing with data. We're dealing with very sensitive data, very sensitive IP. Governments are paying particular attention because this is broadly seen as a technology of national strategic importance, both because of the liquidity and the revolutionary impact on markets. So everyone's trying to create the quantum valley, which is like Silicon Valley, but they want it to be in their region. So governments are looking at it from that kind of upside perspective. They're also looking at it from a risk analysis perspective. And it is a technology that we do need to be mindful can do a huge source for good. It can also be used for nefarious purposes. And making sure that governments are ahead of the curve on that means that they are also deploying capital. And many of the countries have quantum initiatives to make sure that they fully understand the technology, the risks, the benefits, and where the state of play is across the world. So right now, we are seeing different approaches to this, because of course the cloud is global, but you're then looking often at public cloud. So what we're doing now is also deploying our systems into co-location data centers, which is of course where customers' data is already secure. So if we're thinking about how do I integrate quite a disruptive technology without integrating and disrupting a workflow, an existing work process? And when we were talking to customers and banks, they often said, we want to buy a quantum computer. So you don't want to buy one of these things. They're quite large. They're very expensive. By the time we put it in, the technology is going to be out of date, and then we'll charge you a lot to have a service contract. It's just not the right scalable model. Everything is moving towards the cloud. And actually, when we dug into it, what they really mean is we need to know that it's secure, and our data secure endpoint often extends out to the data centers. So we're deploying the next system, which I can't tell you how many qubits there are, but the next system is currently underway, being deployed into London, Heathrow, and Winnersh, as we speak. And one of the benefits of that as well is you can have direct interconnects. So you can do dark fiber connections, and then it doesn't even need to touch public cloud as well. And then we can repeat that model across the world, thinking about local data protection laws. You as customers need to know where your data is going and how that interacts. Another benefit to being in data centers is that there's a hybrid piece to the near-term applications or even the long-term applications. You simply need to be able to spin up a quantum processor. And that needs to integrate with existing calculations. So you need to be able to go, all right, I've got a QPU, I've got a GPU, I've got an IPU. And all of those things need to be able to operate in a low latency environment so that we can start to do that type of processing together. And we need to test this in production as quickly as possible. So that's also why we're putting them in co-location data centers. So it's a windy answer, but covered them all.
Right. Well, you mentioned there how this is seen as a strategic sort of technology by a lot of governments. And some people will have heard that there is this issue about quantum computers being able to break encryption and whether it's going to render all of our data very vulnerable in the future. What's the current state of play in that regard? You know, is this a really big fear? Should we all be really worried about the advent of quantum computers because suddenly all of our data is going to be not encryptable?
Sure. So, just for reference here, it's typically Shor's algorithm, of course, that we're looking at. And with quantum computers, you can start to think about one day being able to do these type of large-scale factorization problems a lot more efficiently, a lot more effectively, which would render, you know, the standard RSA encryption processes useless. So yes, that is something that would be one of the applications, ultimately, or impact that we need to be thinking about today, which is, of course, also why governments are looking at this. It is also why, as an ecosystem, we're coming together and thinking about things like post-quantum cryptography. And I think one of my fellow competitors slash friends, Jan, from IQM, has a talk later today on quantum security. So you might want to see that. It's after mine. It is a key point, and it is one of the reasons why it's kind of driving this quantum nationalism piece. It is something that, in terms of qubit numbers, error, it's still like 15 years away for sure, and that's probably a little bit optimistic. But that's not to say it's not something that shouldn't be taken incredibly seriously. And it's, of course, something that, in a position of leadership and power where we're building the systems, like we have to take responsibility and take an ethical standpoint on the type of applications that we're enabling as well.
Great. I'd love to take a question from the audience, if anyone has one. We have some mics coming around. Is there anyone have a question for Ilana from the audience? If not, I'm happy to go ahead. But if this gentleman right down here in front, if we can get a mic to him, and if you can stand up and let us know who you are, that'd be great. And if we can get a mic to him. They said they had handheld mics coming around. I don't know where they are, but we can get a mic to this guy? No?
They are coming.
Someone's coming.
It'll be good to
hopefully.
See. Hopefully.
I don't know. Maybe you can shout your question. Maybe we can hear it.
If you shout it, we'll
you shout it. It? We can. And Ilana, maybe you can repeat it when he's done.
That's two questions already. We'll stick with that for
all
time,
right.
If that's okay.
Ilana, why don't you repeat one of the questions and then answer it.
So one question was, what is the community doing together, effectively, I'm going to paraphrase, to solve for this type of work in terms of RSA encryption?
Yeah.
So NIST, they run global competitions, and there are companies out there that are already starting to put together quantum cryptography for post-quantum algorithms. It's also something where collaboratively quantum compute companies are starting to think about how do we make sure that we can work together to ethically create codes of conduct across. So we work with like the World Economic Forum. We can also leverage things like the AI space where this has happened before, possibly wasn't handled as well as it could have been then. What lessons can we learn from that? How can we work together as a community internationally?
Great. Since we don't have a mic, I'm just going to carry on. I apologize to the audience, but since we don't have a mic available, I'll just keep doing that. They told us they would be one, but there apparently isn't. One of the things I wanted to ask, you're a full stack company.
Yep.
There are lots of other companies out there that are trying to just take this sort of software approach and be kind of hardware agnostic, they say. Why is a full stack approach, do you think, at OQC important for the way this technology is going to develop? And why do you think that's better than maybe just trying to do a software-based approach?
So ultimately, these are systems, so you can get so much more power out of your quantum computer if you do take that systems integration view. So by doing the processors, control software, control hardware, and linking up to the cloud in-house, we can really get so much more out of the processor. So if you look at Lucy when she launched versus Lucy today, based on like pulse shape optimizations through various partnerships, her quantum volume is increasing week by week, and the performance overall of the system by taking that approach is really important. There are many companies out there that are doing algorithms, and actually what we're starting to see already is them move and be kind of adopted or merged into other organizations. Ultimately, we find customers don't particularly want to give that IP away. They want to develop the algorithms themselves. So where we then integrate is through this sweet spot, so we can support you with algorithms. We don't really want to write the algorithms ourselves, but we have algorithm experts to help users on that learning journey. And we're partnering with other learning houses around how we can support customers that typically integrate with deep algorithmic expertise with data centers on that learning journey for quantum already.
Right. I wanted to talk a little bit about sustainability. And there's concerns, I guess, as data centers get bigger and computing workloads get bigger, that we're using more and more energy. And maybe some people look at quantum computing and say, oh, these things are going to take up even more energy. And it takes a lot of energy to keep them cool. But on the other hand, some people think, no, this is what we really need to address huge problems like climate change. Can you talk a little bit about why that is and where you sort of see the balance of, yes, it's going to take some energy to put these in data centers, but the benefit might justify it?
Yeah, completely. So it's really important. The data centers today, when they say that they're full or we've not got enough, they've not got enough literal energy. Like often the centers don't have the energy connections, not the space. So people are creating entire new infrastructures of data centers that are powered for the future. And of course they are incredibly energy intensive. With a quantum computer, what we've got is an overall system that has a lot more advantages in terms of its overall power utilization. So whilst there is a hump at the beginning when we're doing kind of smaller scale processing power requirements, when you start to scale the processors, the actual energy consumption doesn't increase because you've still got the same amount of cooling power associated with it. So that's one piece, is that actually they're quite efficient in that way. If you then map that onto the overall capability of how much energy you can save by more efficiently running your algorithms and solving your problems in that way, then that's also a key advantage to using energy. So at OQC, we are aiming to be net neutral every single year. We're involved in some of the sustainability pieces, and we work with partners on how do we make the next generation computers even more energy efficient and energy sustainable as well.
Right. And I was going to ask you, I mean, you're a female CEO in this deep tech area, and quantum computing, you know, quantum physics tends to be fairly male dominated. How does it feel to sort of be a female CEO in this industry, and are you seeing more women enter the field?
Very passionate about diversity and inclusion, and I think we all need to be mindful that the technology of the future will absolutely reflect the people that build it today, and I am in an incredibly privileged position to be able to be part of shaping that future. So that is a key point of importance for us at OQC. There are three women founders, actually, in the UK that are all running quantum computing companies. So the three of us together is not enough, of course, but we're power set when we were together. It's still quite heavily male-dominated. Physics itself coming through universities is still quite heavily male-dominated, but we need to help inspire and work with at a grassroots level to make sure the talent comes through, but also find ways to upskill existing talent that is out there in quantum expertise so we can bring it across from all the different industries as well.
Fantastic. Alana, we're out of time, but this has been a fantastic discussion. Thank you. You've been a great audience, and I'll let them bring on the next panel.
Thank you.